My Year of Living Vulnerably, written and read by Rick Morton. When I phoned my mum, Deb, to tell her I was writing a book about love, she was overcome immediately with wheezing laughter. "What, you?" she managed to ask, although the emphasis on "you" was long and made it sound like it had been shouted by a ghost on a passing skateboard. She had a point. Since late childhood, love and I had been on poor terms. Of all the gauntlets high school asked us to run, Valentine's Day was the one that challenged me the most. I wasn't smart enough then to latch on to the fact that it was an invention of marketing, and instead disliked it for how it made me an unwilling participant in love itself. Of course, teenagers don't really understand what love is. The cruel stings of passion and jealousy do not match the grace and acceptance of true love any more than those first attempts at sex matched the elegant freestyle of later encounters. As we neared graduation, most of the grade were engaged in figuring this stuff out. To attend any house party was a lot like trying to stack the glass display counter in a butcher's shop with the day's fresh cuts. Just flesh and hands. My fate, for what it's worth, was to avoid these embarrassing attempts at intimacy in favour of complete celibacy on account of being gay in a regional Queensland school. Gay and in the closet, moreover. Except for two occasions when secrecy demanded proactive misdirection, my lips remained sealed. And though all I was really doing was deferring the awkward discovery tour until my mid-20s, on the whole, not recommended, I was unable to escape the broad pursuits of the heart and, for all the desperate willing in the world, could not stop others from deciding that they loved me. One year, on the 14th of February, I was handed a single yellow rose from a friend who had given it to me on behalf of another student, an anonymous admirer. Anonymous admirers are cowards who would absolutely give away your hiding location during a war if it meant that they could better protect their own interests. In a sense, this is what this girl had done to me. I mean, who gives a rose in public, forcing the recipient to smuggle it back to the bag racks so that it can be hidden before people start gossiping about whether they have feelings? Monsters, that's who. She may as well have given me a grenade with the pin released, or anthrax. This wasn't love. None of the rituals we practiced as teenagers met the criteria for romantic love. But my reaction to this one act exposed the weakness in the scaffolding that would bring me down later in life. The rose, with its delicate assemblage of yellow petals and disappointing thorns, was an admission of vulnerability because it signalled that perhaps its new owner was a vessel for human emotion. Emotions. What a horrible word, I thought. It sounded like the accidental bowel movement one of my then classmates had during computer studies. In my extended family, we didn't love anything. It was a necessary precondition of survival in a world that punished vulnerability. Animals died, so we did not love them. Humans erred, so we did not love them. Friends, well, you only loved your friends if you were queer or dying. Although I had, unfortunately, turned out to be gay, I was determined to uphold the rest of the Morton family legacy by turning my feelings into a misplaced work ethic, like in origami when you set out to make a swan and end up with a chest of drawers. There were darker overtones here that my teenage self had not managed to recognise, largely because the work required to recognise them was intricate, substantial, and largely beyond me.